Welcome to Entrepreneurs the Playbook. And I'm excited to have our friend Mo Juma here, CEO at Waxy. He's been on Go Fund Yourself, starring on there, the number one show on Cheddar. Welcome to the Playbook, Mo.
Thank you for having me, David. I really appreciate the opportunity. And, you know, I love my my appearance and time on Go Fund Yourself. It was a really valuable experience.
Yeah, well, we want to get everybody involved in Waxy, and Go Fund Yourself is a great way that individuals can get involved and support you as we are doing crowdfunding and elevating the awareness to your business that's truly helping so many other people as well. Give me an idea what inspired you to start Waxy.
Yeah, so I didn't talk about it on the show, but a little bit about my past and kind of how I got to where I am right now. So I'm 24 years old right now. I started my first business when I was 19 years old. I was building these crypto mining rigs for myself at the time because I was super into that scene. And then I noticed there was a demand for it in the market. So I started running ads. I started building them for high net worth individuals, people that had $40,000, $50,000 to spend on a mining rig. So I would build those. I would manage them for those clients. And I built my network a lot through that opportunity, meeting people with high net worth. Usually it was entrepreneurs that had disposable income and liked to take risks in new businesses. So from there, I was an advisor and founder for the Miami Dubai Chamber of Commerce. And also I have, you know, patent pending on a few other blockchain technology. And that's how I met the founders at Waxy once it was in its initial ideation stage. So I was privy to this gap in the market because I was taking an Uber once. I was in Florida, and the Uber driver was just complaining to me about, you know, he asked me, how much are you paying for this ride, essentially? And I told him, I'm paying $70 for this ride. It was like a 30-minute ride. And he's like, you're paying $70? Like, he didn't even know. And I'm like, oh, what do they tell you you're making off this ride? He's like, man, I'm lucky if I make $20 on this ride. So right then and there, I'm like, wow, this is crazy. How has this company gotten so big with lying to their, you know, their backbone and their infrastructure like this? So when Buck from Waxy brought me in and said, what do you think of this idea? I said, I think it's a great idea, right? But I think our main friction is, how are we going to launch this and compete with the big guys, right? And that's what any investor would say too. They'd say, how are you going to compete with Uber, Lyft, all these other big monopolies essentially in the US? I said, well, we're not going to launch in the US, right? Like, I work with a lot of people overseas too, especially in Indonesia. And their biggest rideshare provider is called Grab, right? Grab is basically an Uber for that region. At least that's how they started. And they made the experience a little better. They made it dialed in for that local culture, right? Because that's a lot of friction when you're coming into a new culture. They may handle things differently, process differently. So I said, they've seen a lot of success with this. They have a $20 billion valuation. I believe we can find underserved markets with high tourism that we can target that needs this type of solution. But in order to be able to move into these regions, you need to assimilate to these regions, right? You need to give back to the community that you're starting this program in. You need to give them incentives of, hey, we're going to give you guys 80% of this fare, right? We're a marketplace for you guys. I know on the show we talked about launching in the Caribbean, and a lot of pushback we got there is, well, how are you going to launch in the Caribbean? Uber's not over there, X, Y, and Z. It's because I believe Uber didn't come in with the right offer to the people in charge there, right? We've gotten in contact with some political officials there, and we told them, hey, we want to give back this community. You know, most of our earnings are going back to your drivers, 80% of it. And on top of that, we're going to do philanthropy and give a percentage of our profits for hurricane relief, road building, wherever you guys want to allocate this to, where the people that live here need. Also, you know, a lot of these regions are trying to get off of using cash, right? They want digital. They're trying to push their citizens to use digital currencies. So we said we can help that shift as well, right? Because if they're getting paid through the app, and we have enough, and they can, you know, tourists can pay them through the app, then that's great, right? And a lot of them have jet ski businesses, boat rentals. So we're supporting all of that too. So with that approach and that kind of go-to-market strategy, we've been seeing a lot of positive feedback and success and not a lot of friction from these regions we're trying to launch in.
Yeah, it's so interesting because everyone thinks counterintuitively when they look at, you know, lesser developed countries and how this would be. But when you look at the opportunity of tourism and alternative vehicles as well, with yachts and, you know, Sprinter vans and other things that can be utilized on a platform, a ride share platform. One of the other issues is the credibility and insurance side of it. But I assume working with the government, they see the benefit and they're assisting you in making sure that the tourists are protected and insured.
100%. Yeah, because the main issue right now, too, is if you travel to the Bahamas, to get a ride share, you have to call the hotel and they'll send someone to you, right? Or you have to text somebody on WhatsApp and you book it through WhatsApp with like kind of like a private driver, I guess you could say. And, you know, that creates a lot of, you know, skepticism with the people traveling there, especially when they're already used to one way of doing things. It doesn't feel as safe. So by implementing our solution, they'll see the tourists will trust using those systems more, maybe traveling the island more than they usually would, because typically people will go to their hotel and bunker down there, right? Because they don't have a mode of transportation. And a lot of them get sketched out by the mode of transportation that's there right now. So actually what's happening right now is black car services are launching in the region, kind of like luxury private drivers, and that's doing better. Because there's simply no other solution for these people to use, right? So by having dash cams in the vehicle, tracking data, we have direct line of contact with the police force of that area. So if something happens, they click the app, they know exactly where they are, they can take action if needed. So it's also like a user experience for the tourists visiting that region that, you know, the Bahamas leaders are seeing that they'll be extremely beneficial, right, for people to spending money.
You've had great success as well in your entrepreneurial journey. But one of the things in your playbook to success is a challenge that faces so many entrepreneurs today. And it's understanding traditional education versus situational knowledge experience in alignment with opportunity, for example, blockchain or AIs specifically, that may have a better return on investment of time and education. I believe education is extremely important. It's just education has changed. How do you see traditional education today versus the real business world education that you've explored and pursued in your career?
Yeah, 100%. So speaking from personal experience, and honestly, even people around me, I see what they're going through that they went for traditional education. So originally, just to preface this, like I've known what I've wanted to do since I was probably 12, 13 years old, right? I always envisioned myself doing something like this or owning something or doing something disruptive, right? Because a lot of my role models at the time were the Steve Wozniaks and, you know, the people that really make waves in a space just by trusting their gut and kind of challenging what's normal and expected, right? So I ended up doing an early college program where I went straight from middle school straight to college, essentially. And so I knew what I wanted to do. So I'm like, this sounds great. I can take all the computer science classes, stuff like that. I graduated from that program. I graduated with an associate's degree at like 17 years old. And then I transferred to a college. I went to Eastern Michigan University. And, you know, my first year there, that's when I started my business. And I met a entrepreneur that recently sold his company for nine figures, right? He had a large exit. He was 30 minutes away from me. So I went and met up with him. We were talking and he really liked me. He saw my drive, my ambition, how I just do it. You know, I don't get the analysis paralysis. And he ended up mentoring me, right? He mentored me for 2-3 years on basically everything. I would just be his shadow essentially. And while I was going through that, I was weighing if college was really worth it at this point, right? Because I'm like, I've gotten where I wanted to be. This is like my end goal. And I can learn a lot more here by going 100% in instead of being like 50-50, like, oh, I want to, you know, comfy backup. So I ended up dropping out and I just fully pursued that path. And honestly, I've learned a lot more in that field, because at Eastern, I actually went into a business program, and I just, it was being an entrepreneur from so young. I was running e-com stores, all this stuff. I felt like I already knew all this stuff, and I'm self-taught. So everything I've learned has been from YouTube, essentially, right? And then the mentor, so that helped accelerate it. So I don't know. I feel like with the rise of AI right now, I see a lot of people that are graduating with, I know someone that's graduated a PhD, right? In cybersecurity. And he's currently working in, he came to me because I'm an advisor at another startup, and he wanted to work for us just for sweat equity. You know, he's like, I can't find a job right now. It's extremely difficult. It's extremely competitive. I wish I just took this route. So I feel like with the AI tools we have now and all the free education online, it's extremely different, and you can get an accelerated education by yourself. But again, that's not for every person, right? You have to be self-starting. You have to be driven. You have to just believe in it, even when it doesn't look like anything is going to come out of it, right? You have to have that grit. So yeah, I guess it just depends on the person's kind of personality profile of what path makes
things happen very slowly, and then all of a sudden, and
it's all at once.
Most of the time, as an entrepreneur, there's no evidence, or the evidence is contrary, that you're ever going to get to where you want to be or better. Now, crowdfunding, you know, a lot of people don't understand Reg CF or crowdfunding and the advantages of valuation and exposure, especially with Cheddar and what we're able to do there. One, why did you choose to also explore crowdfunding? And then two, where can people participate in Waxy?
Yeah. So I chose the crowdfunding path because in the past, I've been through the ringer of VCs, private equity, all these networking events, going to 5, 6, 7 conferences. I can't remember anymore. Just trying to get a meeting. And typically for VC funding, it's you have to have a warm intro. You know what I mean? So if you just have a vision, and especially if that vision hasn't necessarily been validated yet by somebody else, it's really hard to get that initial round, right? You have to have someone with a larger risk appetite and that kind of already knows you, or that you have a referral. So I've been through that ringer. It was not fun. It took a lot of time. And then I met a lot of people in the space, especially in the crypto space, that was going through the crowdfunding route, and they were seeing a lot of success, right? Because they push on their marketing. They can tailor their product to the actual user, right? And that can be a really strong thing, because when you're presenting to a VC or private equity fund, you need to tailor it kind of like to their brain. So it can be kind of technical, and you know, and you can't really sell your vision. It's really hard to translate that like over. So I feel like when you're able to sell your core vision, and that's what you're able to do with a crowdfunding route, it resonates heavily with people, and you're more likely to see success in that. And I believe for especially what we're doing, where it's kind of a highly emotional product, where it's, you know, look what these people are doing to you. They're taking 80% of your earnings. You're struggling day to day. You're putting miles on your car. There's so many angles we can hit there that really resonates with that core driver and even the rider, that crowdfunding makes a lot more sense for us. Right. Maybe if we were selling an algorithm or something like that, crowdfunding wouldn't make sense, because how is like the normal person probably won't understand that. And it's harder to translate that to the consumer world, you know? So that's why we chose a crowdfunding path. You can invest in us on it's wefunder.com/waxy, W-A-X-I-I.
W-A-X-I-I.
Yep.
He has the real world experience, previous success building into making a lot of money to help a lot of people and have a lot of fun, elevating awareness to what would be fair in the ride share business, not just vehicles, but so many other different alternative transportation opportunities as well. Starting outside the US and working our way back, efficient, fair, and scalable. And he understands this business and has the connections to get it done. Check out the WeFunder campaign. Check out Waxy, W-A-X-I-I. And we are appreciative. Mo Juma, giving a trailblazing playbook to success. Thanks for joining me. This is David Meltzer on Entrepreneurs, the Playbook.